Every single nuclear power plant around Chicago must be shut down immediately. We've got an acute clinical emergency on our hands.
Hello again. We're coming to you from the trenches. I'm Rita Sand. Dr. Helen Caldicott, president of the Nuclear Policy Research Institute and co-founder of Physicians for Social Responsibility, called for shutting down all nuclear power plants at a recent conference in Chicago. We'll hear a short interview with Dr. Caldicott and a speech by a survivor of the 1979 Three Mile Island nuclear accident in Pennsylvania. We'll also hear about what happened outside the presidential debate in St. Louis and about what one doctor calls the Medicare Destruction Act. That and more, but first, a report on the most recent attack on indie media. Chris Kahatsu has the story.
On Thursday, October 7th, 2004, two web servers which provided space to over 20 independent media centers in the United States and around the world were abruptly taken offline by its internet service provider, Rackspace, of San Antonio, Texas. Rackspace was served with a commissioner's subpoena, most likely from the court in the Western District of Texas. Indie Media and its legal representative, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, are both unsure of many of the specifics of the hard drive seizure, since Rackspace has refused to provide a copy of the seizure order. Rackspace issued the statement that, quote, in the present matter regarding Indie Media, Rackspace Managed Hosting, a U.S.-based company with offices in London, is acting in compliance with a court order pursuant to a mutual legal assistance treaty. Rackspace is acting as a good corporate citizen and is cooperating with international law enforcement authorities. The court prohibits Rackspace from commenting further on this matter. Indie Media services would not seem to be covered by the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty, since it applies only to illegal activities like international terrorism, kidnapping, and money laundering. Indie Media's legal representative, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, has contacted the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Departments of State and Justice, the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Antonio, and the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas in an effort to independently determine the origin of the seizure order, but no agency has accepted responsibility. Beyond cutting off local IMCs from Western Massachusetts, Andorra, Brazil, the Czech Republic, Euskal-Herria or Basque Country, Galicia, Italy, Poland, Portugal, the United Kingdom, Uruguay, and multiple sites from France and Belgium, and popular internet radio streams, the hard drive seizure is also troubling in that the seizure may have violated the United Kingdom's confidentiality charter. The Independent Media Center Network is currently examining two events preceding the hard drive seizure, which may have had some bearing. On September 22, 2004, the FBI contacted Rackspace regarding some images and material hosted on Indie Media servers by the Nantes Independent Media Center of France. According to Rackspace, the FBI alleged that a particular article on the website nantes.indiemedia.org contained personal information and threats regarding two Swiss undercover police officers. The Nantes Independent Media Center webmasters determined that the post contained neither threats nor names or addresses information, as they found only photographs of the officers disguised as anti-globalization protesters. Nevertheless, the Swiss request was conveyed to the Nantes IMC webmasters, who then digitally masked the faces of the officers in the photos. The FBI followed up with a visit to Devin Theriot Orr, the registered agent for the Seattle Independent Media Center. The agents again incorrectly alleged that the Nantes article contained personally identifying information about the Swiss officers, including their home address and phone numbers. During this meeting, FBI Special Agent Eric Mueller clarified that they were not contending any laws had been broken and that there was nothing wrong with the photos of the officers, but were rather passing on a request from the Swiss government. A Rackspace manager wrote to say that she received no further communications from either the FBI or the Swiss authorities and closed the issue. There has been no confirmation that the Swiss government invoked the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty in this instance. Indeed, FBI Special Agent Eric Mueller, when contacted by the Electronic Frontier Foundation on October 12, 2004, denied any knowledge of the seizure, and inquiries with the Swiss General Attorney in Geneva, Switzerland have not led to any confirmation from the Swiss. Finally, on October 13th, Morena Plazzi, a public prosecutor in Bologna, Italy, admitted unofficially that she requested IP address log information from the Italy Indie Media server through the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty, but did not seek the seizure of the server hardware. In the United Kingdom, Caroline Flint, Secretary of State for the Home Department, confirmed that no UK law enforcement agencies were involved with the seizure. This is Chris Kaihatsu reporting for the Chicago Independent Media Center.
You've all heard about the presidential debate in St. Louis, Missouri at Washington University. But did you hear what happened outside the debate? On October 8th, some 300 people comprised of Greens, Libertarians, Naderites, anarchists, socialists, community activists, and students converged to protest the debates, the two-party system, and the war in Iraq. The epicenter of the convergence was the Grace United Methodist Church, where free food provided by Food Not Bombs and free educational workshops ranging in topics from direct action to the prison industrial complex were offered. The end of the day culminated in a march through the streets of St. Louis to Washington University, where the presidential debates were being held. Protesters were met by Bush-Cheney supporters and numerous columns of police in full riot gear. As the debates went on inside, outside, in a space called the public viewing area, two uninvited presidential candidates spoke to gathered protesters. A passionate David Cobb, presidential candidate for the Green Party, used a bullhorn to whip up the crowd.
Sisters and brothers, thank you very much. I wanted to give that chant because I know that our libertarians agree with no more war. I know the socialist contingency agrees with no more war. The Green Party agrees with no more war. The Nader supporters agree with no more war. We are saying, the people are saying, no more war. Folks, I'm here to tell you the Green Party is getting larger and stronger and better organized with every election cycle. And we're doing it against all odds. We're excluded from the debates. The corporate media does their best to ignore us or marginalize and ridicule our efforts. And we're living in a voting system where people feel they have to vote against what they hate rather than for what they want. And in that incredible context, the Green Party is growing. There is a growing movement in this country for peace, a growing movement for racial and social justice, a growing movement against the racist prison industrial complex and the military industrial complex. These movements are growing. Sisters and brothers, I'm going to be brief, right? How about that for a politician? The Greens are growing for a simple reason. We're telling the truth. We're willing to tell the truth about a looming ecological crisis. We're telling the truth about a system that is literally destroying our planet and creating this oppressive, racist, sexist, homophobic world order with the plunder. We're telling the truth that's very hard for some to know, but I bet y'all know. Here it is. This is not a democracy. Right? The most dangerous threat to democracy in this country is the mistaken belief that we actually have one. Today, unelected and unaccountable corporate CEOs are not just exercising power. Sisters and brothers, they are ruling us. They are making the fundamental public policy decisions that affect our lives. We say, ya basta, enough already. Stand up, rise up, fight them in the streets, fight them at the ballot box, fight them at the courthouse. We gotta rise up together. I want to conclude with this observation. The Green Party is calling for systemic change, real change, meaningful change. Throughout all of American history, real meaningful change has followed a trajectory. You can mark it down, and it goes like this. Step one, people start talking to each other and have conversations that the elites don't want you to have. Step two, those people go from talking to organizing. Step three, organized people begin to develop a program and a platform and a plan where they say, hey, we actually are going beyond complaining to planning and strategizing for taking power. And not power over, but power with, right? A new way of thinking about power. The next step in systemic social change in this country has always been that these organized people say, hey, it's supposed to be a representative democracy. Let's go to our elected representatives and ask for some change. So, hey, come on, y'all. Let's go get some systemic change. Knock on the halls of power. Knock, knock, knock. Hey, establishment political parties, we want some change. And you know what? The establishment parties have always reacted one of two ways. Either they say, oh, well, it's really sweet, and we really, like, it's really nice what you're suggesting, naive and unrealistic. That can't be done. Go away. Or the established parties will say, you want what? Well, you're a dangerous un-American for even suggesting it. You're a socialist. You're a communist. You're an anarchist. Today, they might add, you're a terrorist. Go away. You're not even allowed to be heard. But folks, don't you see the establishment parties have always concluded demands for systemic social change with the same response. They say, go away. And I want to conclude with this observation. I want us to acknowledge the fact. I want us to respect the fact. I want us to celebrate the fact. And I want us to be grateful for the fact that people before us did not go away.
That was David Cobb, presidential candidate for the Green Party. Next up was a confident Michael Bednarik, presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party.
The Declaration of Independence says that when any form of government becomes destructive of our liberties, is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. One of the first steps in altering our government is to protest loudly and publicly. Can I hear how many people out there are unhappy with the way our government is right now? Can I hear you? Okay, what we're doing is basically drawing attention to the fact that we are not happy. We need to change this government. The Libertarian Party is all about individual rights and personal responsibility. In any situation, any decision about your life, either you can make that decision or the government can make that decision for you. Can I hear a shout from all the people that think that they are smart enough to make their own decisions in life? Excellent. Excellent. Sounds like we've got a large group of libertarians out there. I don't know how you vote, but if you have the audacity to think that you're smart enough to make your own decisions, you are definitely libertarian in your heart. Now, this whole event here, we have George Bush and John Kerry presumably debating not far from here. Now, the questions are scripted. The answers are scripted. This is not a debate. This is a Broadway play. What we are trying to do is we are trying to exercise our freedom of speech. David Cobb and I are planning to go over there towards the debate to see if we can't ask George Bush and John Kerry a few questions. Unfortunately, based on the way that things have gone, we expect that our freedom of speech is going to be limited. We expect that they are going to prevent us from getting into the debate, even though David and I are both legitimate candidates from a legitimate party. David and I have a right to have our message heard. But more importantly, the American people have a right to hear our message. Not long ago, we selected Miss America from over 50 contestants. And the office of President of the United States is far more important. How many people think that you'd like to select your President of the United States from more than just two candidates? One of the reasons that I am running for President of the United States is because I am not happy with the way things are. I cannot vote for George Bush or John Kerry and respect myself in the morning. I cannot vote for somebody who's going to continue the war. I cannot vote for somebody who's going to restore the draft. I cannot vote for somebody who's going to continue passing unconstitutional laws like the Patriot Act. I think that's unconscionable and totally unacceptable. So we are going to go over there. We're going to try to debate these people. We're trying to get the message out. However, I want to leave you with one general idea. Benjamin Franklin said that there is a difference between revolution and rebellion. Revolution is an astronomical term. When a planet revolves around the sun, it comes back to its original starting point. And according to Benjamin Franklin, the American Revolution was a change in the way that people were thinking. a change coming back to the starting point of private property and individual rights. After that American Revolution, we had to then fight for that idea, and the subsequent fighting was the American Rebellion. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to start another American Revolution. I'm trying to change the way that people think.
Capitalism.
And I'm asking you to help me. I'm asking you to talk to your friends, talk to your coworkers, stop people on the street. We need to change the way that people think about our government and the relationship with the people. Because if we don't change the way that people think, invariably there's going to be a rebellion, and I would like to try to avoid that. How many people are out there to help me change the way that people think and start another American Revolution? Can I hear you? Keep up the good work. I will continue lighting the fires of liberty one heart at a time, and David Cobb and I are going to go, and we're going to exercise our freedom of speech.
That's just what they did. Cobb and Bednarik made two attempts to enter the debates.
Open the debate! Open the debate!
Both candidates were arrested and brought to jail, where they posted bail and were released hours later. From the trenches, I'm Ted Forsyth.
I'm a presidential candidate!
Open the debate! Open the debate!